people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Thank you for joining us again. I'm sitting here in the studio in Strongbox West, this time with
Ben
and
Becca.
And we're going to talk about a variety of things today. On our list, on our agenda for today, is Becca's got a couple of jokes she wants to tell us, including Fiero's story. I want to talk about Operation Southern Shield. I've also heard something about a new truck from Ford geared towards the police audience. Ben has some observations to make about the Evora. Apparently, Lotus churns out a new car every 2 months. And and we've heard recently about some car companies not only killing their V8 projects, but killing their V6 projects in favor of more powerful V4s. I think that's our agenda for today. And if we have time, there may be other things we talk about. But let's see how far we get. Let's start with the V8 topic. Becca, you were talking about, and I know we've mentioned this in the floor before, on the, you know, for us before, about how the Mustang program should never have killed their V8s.
Well, the Mustang program hasn't killed its V8.
I thought you told me they did.
Well, what I was referring to back a couple of years ago when I needed to find something that was more family friendly. You know, I love my Mustangs. I wanted to keep my Mustang.
Yes, you do.
But it came to a point where I realized I was being kind of crazy. It's not in the best interest of my children. Some of the things that went through my head, how to get car seats in the back of a Mustang. And I have twins, so I had to get two of them. There was no put it in the middle option.
Right.
So I started looking around, and Ford's lineup, other than the Mustang and the F-150, and I can't remember if the Explorer in the four-door still retained its V8. I think it still does. But other than that, there were no V8s in the lineup. Now, when they had the Taurus SHO previously, and by the way, don't call it a show. There's a whole commercial that calls it the Taurus Show. Do not call it
that. God, I hate that.
Yeah. So even the SHO was a V6. And I was pretty angry about that. Because, I mean, I'll always tell people I'm a Mustang fan, not a Ford fan. But they are also the devil that I know. So I looked around and... because my family is heavily rooted in the American auto industry, I did look at some of the imports, Audis, things like that for rear-wheel drive, V8. I really wanted to keep part of what I loved about cars. I knew I would never hear the end of having an import. So, you know, it was hard. But there was the Dodge Charger, and it was still relatively new at the time. Because now my boys are 7.5, so it's been a few years. And I have a friend who's a master mechanic, and he kept saying, don't. So I guess in the early years, there were some bugs, and he was seeing a lot of them come through with significant issues in the first few years. So
yeah, I'm never a fan of being an early adopter on anything. It's like,
right.
Let the other people suss out their problems with the thing, and then maybe we'll talk about it later. But anyway.
Well, and on the G8, I had no options. That car was only in the States for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
So, and while it had been around for quite a while down in Australia under Holden Commodore, it's pretty glitchy, but not a lot of options there. And I do love the car. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But yeah, it's difficult when something has a lot of bugs in it.
Well, the thing I read was specifically, I think, in regards to Honda. Honda is killing their V6 program overall. They're getting rid of the V6, and they're going to put into the 2018 Accord a Type R engine of some sort.
Well, Honda did relatively well. And that's high marks coming from me talking about Honda or a four-cylinder. When they brought out the S2000, I was mildly impressed, and that's still... saying something for me.
Right.
It still couldn't beat my cars, but, you know, hey.
Well, for what it is and for, you know, what its intended audience is, it's awesome. The only reason I didn't become a real huge S2000 fan was because early on I sat in one and found that my knees and the steering wheel didn't get along.
Yes, it's not comfortable even for shorter than average people.
But I've ridden in them, and it was a great ride. It's a good-looking little car. But back to the V6 thing, the Accord, the V6 Accord was a staple for a long time. But this is, I think, a reflection of a broader trend, which is that if you're not going to go into the big, you know, V8, if you're going to do something smaller but still expect some performance, the Turbo 4, which is, I think, what you meant to say in the intro, when you said V4.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, did I say V4?
You did. So for all our listeners out there, no, there aren't any V4 cars running around at present.
I'm so ashamed. That's terrible.
I think the old Saabs of the early 60s were the last V4 cars we saw on these shores. But no, the Turbo 4s that they're making now are, well, they're making leaps and bounds with the performance and the technology of them. You know, turbochargers have been around for decades, but only recently have they become as incredibly, amazingly good as they are. And Turbo 4s now are able to offer the same, you know, high-end performance as a V6, but they have an additional advantage that when you back off on them, they become more economical than any V6 ever could.
Exactly.
It's a much more flexible, you know, broad-based package than a V6.
Right. Well, I mean, can you say the same thing about the transition from V8 to V6?
Not really. It's just a little bit less. With American cars, the American car companies really ran with V6s for a while in the 70s and 80s because they did not, as I see it anyway, I'm not quoting history here, but I think they didn't want to spend the resources to completely develop completely new engine platforms. So they chopped a couple cylinders off, refined it a little bit, and ran with it. It's easy to scale down.
Yeah. Becca looks very sad.
Oh, no, that was my pondering.
Because to make a V8 in the same displacement range as the V6s they made would have, again, required a whole new platform.
Well, one thing that I had crossing my mind, hadn't I seen somewhere an article where they were talking about bringing back the Prelude?
Oh, interesting.
As far as the, I guess, performance spectrum, because it used to be one of the most likely wrenched on Hondas. Performance. So if they're doing away with the V6s, why are they bringing back the Prelude just to use the same platform in it than everything else?
There is a 2018 Honda Prelude concept, at least the first things that come up on...
What is the engine?
On a search. It does not say. This particular article does not say.
Be willing to bet it's going to be a 4 because, well, the 4 I think is going to be all Honda is going to have going forward, different types of 4s. But the Prelude in the past was Civic-based, and it was 4-cylinder. And I think the loss of the 2-door Accord might be one reason why they're bringing it back.
Oh, that I hadn't heard. They're going to be solely 4-door?
Yeah.
Okay, so bringing the Prelude back as the 2-door sportier.
Yeah, because there's not a 2-door Civic now that I'm aware of either. The generation that just went out made a very handsome little coupe, but the current generation, the current generation Civic is a little funny looking, and I think is only available in a 4-door. A lot of companies are going to 1-body variant.
Yeah.
You can't get a 2-door Golf anymore, even in the GTI.
Yeah,
he says coupe with his pinky finger up.
Whatever. No
teacup.
I'm sorry,
I'm picking on you. I'm picking on you, but...
I do kind of ask for it, don't I?
Okay, so on this really basic internet search for 2018 Honda Prelude, there are the top links, anyway, the top 10 links all say it's still something that Honda has not yet confirmed.
Right.
They're speculating the car will cost around $30,000 to $35,000, but they don't have any engine specs or any performance specs on it at all.
Right.
I don't know. It's an interesting rumor. I hope maybe one of our listeners can tell us that, yes, it's true and it's happening.
And Honda have always been pretty secretive about what they've got in the pipes.
Sure.
They don't show a lot of concept cars. They don't make a lot of announcements too far ahead of time. I kind of respect them for that. It kind of seems a little classy.
Oh, I miss the old Prelude.
Yes.
The third generation Prelude I had was easily one of the best things I ever drove. It was easy to work on. It drove like a dream. It was just so fast. At the time, they called it the poor man's Porsche, and there was every good reason for that. It just, you touched the accelerator and it just sang.
They're still sought after.
Yeah.
And I saw a Prelude, I forget what generation, the second to last one, I think, for sale up near me.
Yeah.
Not terribly long ago.
The fourth generation. Honda did 5 generations of Prelude before they killed the program.
Yeah, this would have been a 4th, I think.
The 5th generation and the 3rd generation, I think, are the most popular ones.
Yes. But this one, it was faded. The seats were a little torn, but it said it had had, you know, recent service. It had 219,000 miles on it and a manual transmission.
Just getting started. Yeah.
And they wanted, you know, $3,000 for it.
Yeah.
And for any other car in that condition, that would be asking a little much. But I think if this guy, you know, does his, if he aims his ads properly, he'll get that.
Let's move on to the next thing on our agenda. Becca, what's the Fiero story? We've been talking about that for a while.
It's a funny but tragic story. It's not really a joke. It's just whenever anybody talks about Fiero, this one springs to mind. The neighborhood that I grew up in, there was a girl in the neighborhood whose name was Becky, and her house was right over by the lake and the tennis courts, and her house was up on a hill, I guess, overlooking the lake and the tennis courts. And one day she got home and she forgot to put on her parking brake.
Oh my.
Oh, no.
When they found the Fiero, it was at the bottom of the lake.
Oh, no.
And the whole neighborhood had come out to watch them pull the Fiero from the bottom of the lake. It's not a deep lake. It was just a little man-made by
sure,
the subdivision
yeah.
people. Uh-huh. And because there was a natural creek running back there anyways. And, yeah, so every time I think Fiero, I think about pulling it out of the bottom of a lake. Mm-hmm. But at least it wasn't on fire.
That's right.
I almost overturned a Fiero once.
They're pretty low.
It shocked the heck out of me. I was working at a car dealership at a time, and a used one came in. This must have been around 88 or 89. I mean, I was just doing a summer job at this thing, right? I was just washing cars and fixing certain basic things, and I was a porter, for lack of a better description. And here I am, 19-year-old Mickey, driving cars around, and someone said, "Hey, move this Fiero to the other side of the building." I'm like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." And I'm not going fast. I'm on the clock. I'm trying to behave, right? I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary with this car. And all I did was drive it down one side of the service department, around the back side of the building, and to the other side. And making one of those corners on the back side of the building, I'm going at most 30 miles an hour. Two wheels come off the ground. Just making that one turn.
I feel like something was very wrong with the suspension.
Something might have been wrong with the suspension, and now that I'm thinking about it, maybe there was an actual defect in the paving back there behind the building. But
possible.
Or a combination thereof. They're low cars.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
yes.
I got a little bit of air on two tires, and then it sat back down again, and I'm like, what the heck just happened? And I've always wondered ever since then what exactly went on with that particular car, because it's low center of gravity. It's not supposed to do that kind of thing, especially
right.
at 30 miles an hour. So.
Well, and it probably didn't get as much air as you think it did. Because those moments when you don't expect wheels to come off are, you know, if you're not used to that kind of thing, can be a little scary. I've done that on a motorcycle. Sometimes a front wheel will come up. I think I'm being Evel Knievel, and everybody else tells me, no, you got about that much. I'll be like, whoa, Nelly, what's going on? You know. But
right.
I did get a forklift on two wheels in a turn once.
No, that sounds like fun.
It is actually quite scary. Well, I mean, it's fun if you don't know why it should be scary.
Right.
If you're, you know, untrained and not
if
used to it.
If you didn't intend to do it either.
I definitely didn't intend to.
Right.
But, and that was before I had, you know, proper training on the thing. And now in hindsight, I look back and go, oh my God. Because
we're all lucky to be alive.
if you tip over a forklift, that is a very dangerous situation.
For sure.
But not to get on too big a tangent with forklifts there. They're not exactly the most exciting cars in the world.
Forklift races. What's the Yugo joke?
What do you call a station wagon Yugo?
Oh, this ought to be good. What do you call it?
A Wego.
Ah!
What do you call a motorcycle by Yugo?
Oh, boy. Tugo?
An Igo.
Oh. Well, you know why it has those little wires on the rear window, right?
Why?
To keep your hands warm while you're pushing it.
Oh, there you
oh!
go. Good one.
That's great. I kind of liked the Yugo once upon a time.
It was cute.
It got an unnecessarily bad reputation. I say that with my tongue sort of in my cheek, not quite. I don't think I ever would have bought one, but I don't think I ever would have faulted someone for buying one either.
No. They did have real reliability issues. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
But for what they were intended to be, had they not been so unreliable, I mean, yeah, they were a cute-looking little thing. They were basic. They were small. They were cheap.
It was meant to be a perfect econo-box car. That's all it ever was.
If all you need is a set of tires and a roof to get you somewhere, then and you don't need a whole lot of cargo space, they would have been perfect had they been reliable.
Right. See, I would put the original Mini and the VW Beetle ahead of, hey, a Yugo.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, those two were both absolutely world changers.
But they were more basic.
Wait, the Beetle and which one?
The
original Mini.
Oh, yes.
Not the new fancy one with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
Well, the Yugo was really basic, too.
Yeah. And you're also looking at economics and regional politics and stuff like that that made those things great successes.
It'd be a block car.
The Mini would not have been the success it was if the British auto industry hadn't been in the situation that it was at that time, too.
Yeah.
Or if they'd paved the roads a little better. Just saying.
That as well. But Alex Isagonis was knighted for the Mini, ultimately. Hmm. Yeah, because that car almost single-handedly saved the British auto industry.
Did it really?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was the post-war era. It was the 1950s. Yeah. Everything was kind of industrially depressed. They hadn't really had any new blood in cars, and the country's still pulling out from under a war.
Sure.
So, something cheap and basic and affordable was just what everybody needed, and he came up with this thing. And before that, he'd already given them the Morris Minor, which was a good step in that direction. The Morris Minor was legendary. The Mini took it further, and it became intensely popular because it was very affordable, very easy to park in crowded Britain.
I want to say that my fiance's mother drove a Morris Minor while she was in college here at Tech.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should go and talk to her sometime.
We should. I had a Mini once myself, one of the old ones.
Yeah.
Only for a few. I had it for a few months while I was stationed in Germany. It was rusted out. It had more problems than I can remember, but I loved it. It was so much fun to drive. It was an adult go-kart.
Right. Well, we need more car jokes. I'm going to ask the listener to actually write in some car jokes.
Yes.
Maybe send them to us on our Facebook page.
Anybody listening, if you know a good car joke, we want to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not about what Ford stands for.
That might offend Becca.
I've heard them all.
All right. So speaking of Fords. Ford is making a new pickup truck specifically for police departments. And the initial write-ups I've read said that it's all about giving police off-road options for law enforcement, off-road in the wilderness, presumably. And I'm thinking, my first thought was, why? Because looking at the streets here in Atlanta, our Atlanta police people are already using certain kinds of SUV types of vehicles on the interstates, not even off-road.
Yeah, I first have to wonder, how often do you feel you're going to be getting off-road to do that? But
I mean, it's not meant for pursuit, right? I imagine this is the kind of thing a ranger or somebody would drive, but don't they already have trucks that are used for that purpose?
Not all SUVs or trucks are necessarily made for off-road.
That is true.
Well, also, too, you've got... in some places, you have more rural police departments, and you've also got the game warden type people who are increasingly called upon to do more and more cop-like things, especially in, say, border areas, some national forests. You've got
poaching
things happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, the police business has become a lot more technological. So in the old days, a police package vehicle was one with a little more engine, a little more suspension, and, rubber floor mats. But nowadays, these cars have to be built, wired to take a zillion radios and computers and other devices.
Right.
It's so much easier to install a lot of that technological infrastructure at the factory than it is at the little police garage.
Yep.
Although, I have to wonder, why would they choose a pickup truck over an SUV? Because even if you are, chasing whatever off-road, how are you going to detain the person or people? You're going to sit around and wait for the SUV to show up?
You strap them to the roof like a deer.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. I like that.
Well, yeah.
A big cage in the back.
Yeah, sometimes detain and transport, in the past have been separate vehicles.
Well, and I can't remember, we were talking about this before we started recording, but one of you mentioned that Ford has been losing a lot of their police market because, they're not making the Crown Vic anymore.
Right.
And the standard police cruiser these days has turned into a Dodge Charger or some sort of Chevy.
In my area, it's almost always the Charger.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the ones with the bumper stickers about this has been a confiscated vehicle.
And, right.
But it used to be 99.9% of the police, at least in this area, the police cars were Crown Vics or Ford. We also had the Interceptors from the Mustang, both service and non-service.
Uh-huh.
And I know that because I was the fortunate owner of a 92 Interceptor. But yeah, it's almost hard pressed to find a Ford anymore.
There's a local department up my way that runs Tauruses, but then there's the county department that's much bigger and more visible that runs Chargers.
So Ford has lost a big piece of the police market, it seems, and maybe this is one way of them saying...
And trucks are popular.
Yeah.
No.
But see, them having Fords used to benefit me so much.
Right.
No, it just... you'd get pulled over, they'd ask you, do you know how fast you were going? And you start in with the, you know, no, I'm having problems with my speedometer. I just put $500 into the engine. I'm having problems with my rear diff. And then look over your shoulder and say, do you have a Ford back there? And they'll bow their head, yes.
And I said Taurus a moment ago. I should, if I'm going to do pinky out, that would be Tauri.
Ah,
Taurus is Tauri.
I would say what I call them, but I think we try to keep it clean.
Yeah, we're keeping it clean. Right.
It might end up me being bleeped a little bit. So.
Bleepity bleeping police cars.
Well, with approximately 5-ish minutes left into this particular episode, what should we tackle next? You know, perfect segue. Police, right? We're talking about the Ford police vehicle. Here in Georgia and Alabama and a couple other states, I think South Carolina, they're doing Operation Southern Shield, which I thought was kind of funny. That here, you know, someone has finally decided that a third of all vehicular deaths in the state of Georgia are the result of speeding. And so now I think they were going to take a 4-day period and crack down on speeders really hard. Operation Southern Shield had a definite timeline around it. There was a finite beginning and a finite end. And that's the duration that they're going to try to teach Atlantans a lesson and not speed in the name of safety. And I have a few thoughts, which is, one is, if you're trying to teach people not to speed, you're not going to succeed in the space of a week.
Right.
And not on 75 currently.
Right.
Well, you notice, too, if you pay much attention, they do some variation on this every year.
Sure.
I think last year it was called 100 Days of Summer Heat. It's a 100-day-long, enforcement crackdown period. And everybody speeds, so it's basically easy money for them, in my opinion. If they really, really want to, do a safety thing, they really ought to crack down on distracted driving.
Absolutely.
All those people texting and drinking lattes and all that jazz.
Yeah. Definitely. You know, I was in the insurance industry for a long time, and I had repeatedly seen reports that said speeding is not typically the cause. Someone is speeding along, and yes, it definitely plays a part into the accident and the extent of the damage or injuries.
Oh, yes.
However, it's generally the other people either not paying attention or misjudging how fast somebody is speeding, and they make a move that enters into the way of the speeder. So where it plays into it, it was somebody else not realizing. Most of the time, the speeder is not wrecking on his own. Somebody else misjudges and crosses their path.
Oh, sure. And the more variation there is between the speed of different vehicles, the more potential for high closing speeds you have.
Well, again, it just makes me think, if you want to change driving behaviors and if you want to save people's lives on the interstate, aren't there some other things that you could be doing in the meantime? Not to mention, if the intent is to teach people a lesson and not to speed over the course of 1 week, what are our police people doing the rest of the time that they're on the roads? Like, what about the other 51 weeks in the year when, is no one speeding those other 51 weeks in the year? And what are our cops doing during that time? Now, let me insert a quick caveat here. I have friends who are cops and police officers and detectives, and I don't mean to make them look bad in any way, but I think that, my complaint here is with Atlanta and with the notion that a one-week program is supposed to actually save lives in the name of decreasing speeding.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I had a great idea. If they want us to stop speeding on the highways and roadways, maybe they should give us free tracks to get out and just get it out of our system. We can just fly around this track and do whatever and then go out on the highways and behave ourselves.
And maybe they shouldn't be repaving 85, because if they leave it full of potholes, it's not going to be so easy to speed anyway.
Turn the whole thing into a gigantic set of speed bumps.
Have you been on 575 recently with
not
all this destruction?
I was on 75 yesterday, but not 575.
It is a disaster with what they're doing.
I'm sure.
Mm.
So anyway, I think that's all we have time for today. We may revisit some of these topics later. The next time we get together with Becca in the room, that is our other Becca, not the current lovely Becca. We have the other lovely Becca.
We need to find a way to say who is who.
Right. Maybe we'll use last names or something.
I'm Becca with a K.
Becca with a K.
Or you could be Esmeralda, you could be Raul, and I could be Lance.
There you go.
Why do I have
Esmeralda
to be Raul?
Well, just for example, you can be whoever you want to be.
Raul is exotic. Come on.
Oh, see, there you go.
Raul. Can somebody roll that? Raul.
Raul. See, I can't be Raul because I'm painfully white. I'm just not exotic enough to pull that off.
Well, then great. How am I Esmeralda? Should I be Casper?
All right. Well, this is The Thing About Cars in Strongbox West, as usual. Please check them out, strongboxwest.com. When you join us next time on the next episode or so, we'll talk about 10 things maybe you shouldn't try to do to your car in the name of cars and repairs or car repairs. That's it. Anything else?
Don't speed.
Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.